Episode 38 of This Is Us 2 is brought to you by Minute with Mary. If you have yet to join my marvelous VIPs on Facebook, please take a moment to do so after you listen to this podcast. I share free tips and tricks and also some deals in that group with all of my marvelous VIPs. So just search the hashtag Minute with Mary. From Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to This Is Us 2. It's a podcast dedicated to This Is Us on NBC. So sit back, relax, and let's all have a good cry. Hey everybody, how's it going? My name's Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I feel like I need to take another big deep breath.
Right?
Because we just plowed through two seasons worth of This Is Us very quickly.
Very quickly.
And now we're moving on to season three.
Mm-hmm.
And wow.
Yep.
Wow, what a big deal here. Yep. I'm excited for it. I can't wait to move on. And the good thing is that we don't have to wait all that long. We're only, I think, 5 days out.
I know. We timed that pretty well. I'm not going to lie.
It's because we're awesome. So in order to help us bring in and ring in season three, we have a very fun interview
for
you.
Yes, yes.
So why don't we get to it? Let's stop wasting some time and let's bring on our guest. What do you
Perfect.
Say? All right, let's do it.
Joining us today is Dan Sneerson of Entertainment Weekly. Dan's covered many of television's finest programming during his tenure at Entertainment Weekly, including Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and Lost. Needless to say, he's kind of a big deal, guys. But we all know him as the lead writer and news source for our favorite show on NBC, This Is Us. Dan, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on This Is Us, too.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we had the Emmys just recently. It was two nights ago as we record this. No Emmys for This Is Us. Is it just too hard now for network shows to compete with cable and pay networks, do you think?
I think that is definitely one of the challenges. You know, I think they might argue, too, that a family drama is that's a tough genre to break through in awards, too. So maybe it's a combination of those two factors. But Sterling K. Brown would tell you it's not too hard to break through, I think.
Valid point.
Yeah.
So as we move on to the rest of This Is Us and what we're trying to do here, I have a couple of personal questions for you first. You've covered a lot of great television. I mean, between Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and even Lost with Jeff Jensen, which, by the way, I watched your show, Totally Lost. It was it was appointment viewing, in my opinion. I watched it every single week. Have you ever found yourself connecting to This Is Us like you did with those other shows?
I mean, the mythology was so deep on Lost, it was easy to get lost in a really fun way in that. And the tone of This Is Us doesn't lend itself maybe to the same level of, I don't know whether it's fan theorizing, though obviously This Is Us has an element of that, which I really respond to. The humor on Lost at times with Hurley. I mean, yes, there's humor on This Is Us. I don't know, that just felt like we could be like maybe a little wackier and you could lose your mind a little more in that show. So I don't know if you connect exactly the same way, but you know, I probably cry more, I guess, you know, from This Is Us, or at least, you know, the suggestion of a tear if I'm not crying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Well, that being said, of course, so many of these episodes have brought a tear to our eyes. What has been your favorite episode of This Is Us so far?
This may be a little bit of an obvious answer, but I thought Memphis was just so powerful. And I don't think that's necessarily the perfect example of the show. It's a little more of a standalone episode. We're really drilling down, you know, on Sterling K. Brown and Ron Cephas Jones, who are just absolutely amazing. But that episode, it was a bit of a travel episode. The intimacy of that, the sort of, you know, death is coming, but not exactly on the terms that you might expect. I think those hospital scenes with Randall were really powerful. And the book of poetry, you know, how that kind of came around too. That episode that got me right in the feel zone.
So would your favorite performance be in Memphis, or was it like your favorite performance from an actor, or is it in Memphis or in another episode?
That Dr. K scene, and I think any Dr. K scene I would nominate up there too. I thought her scene with him on the bench at the funeral was pretty amazing stuff. A lot of Milo's speeches really get me too. When he confessed to young Kate that he had a problem with alcohol, mm-hmm. and that the weakness he showed and that vulnerability, I should say, that he showed to his daughter, that I actually need you guys. Like, I'm going to lean on you to hopefully get through this, which is a lot to ask of a kid. I thought speeches like that were really powerful. Milo's had some great, great moments. I mean, they all have. What about you guys?
Oh, I think my favorite performance actually comes in Super Bowl Sunday with Mandy Moore, when she sees, at the dead Jack in the reflection as we see it as viewers. That, like, it was just 2 minutes of silence, and her face told mm-hmm. a whole mm-hmm. story unto itself for just 2 minutes of silence. It was incredible.
Yes.
Yeah.
So true.
I totally agree with you. And that sort of the candy bar moment, yeah, you just mm-hmm. like, you can't, like, just that those odd reactions we might have at the moment of tragedy, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about the Emmys, and we've talked about other shows like Breaking Bad and Lost, and I'm going to even mention Mad Men here. Yeah. Where do you think This Is Us has the chance to grow and to really push into that elite level of television like those other shows we mentioned?
I think it's too early. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people were, disappointed with later Lost and maybe, how it ended. But I still think there was some sustained excellence there. I would put Breaking Bad at a fairly untouchable level mm-hmm. right now. To me, when you mention those shows, they're all shows that are amongst my favorite. But I would put Breaking Bad maybe at the top of that heap. I think This Is Us, again, I looked, again, going back to a Memphis episode, I think it has the ability to be that. It walks that line of sentimentality. It straddles that line. It clings to that line. It crosses over that line sometimes. I think finding that balance for the show that's what it's going to take to get it, into that next level. I think there are people, and you guys are super fans, but that you'll talk to them and they're like, it's just too manipulative at times. It's just a little too cheesy at times, I like, it's sort of unabashed sentimentalism, but, I can see how that can be problematic at times. We could go through it and just moments where I wish the show had expanded a little more or taken a few more chances. But I, for a broadcast network show, I love what they've done. And, it's a pretty special show to me. I would say it's near that area. It's just not quite at that area, I'd say.
I feel like it actually started off very well. It grabbed me. I feel like from the pilot, right from when it started.
It just this idea of, I thought, like the Lost pilot, which I know grabbed you two just as much as it did me, where when that ended, guys, where are we? You were just in. I thought that twist was so well placed and so well done that it immediately established to me this is beyond a broadcast network show that you're used to. Like, that set the standard for me. I thought that twist was laid in so perfectly. And what I really liked about it too was they gave it away. They put the year on the boxes, when they're in their room, and you're
in the vacuum cleaner too.
Yeah. And the hospital equipment and the way they're dressed, and you just go, oh, maybe they they live in a cool neighborhood and they wear hipster clothing.
Hipsters, yeah.
And the hospital equipment, you say, oh, well, it's a TV show, so maybe they just didn't get it right or whatever. I love that your brain, 1979, okay, those are old things. Your brain keeps telling you something's off here, and you just rationalize it yourself. I thought he handled that so well. And that to me said that this show was going to be something special.
Right. And never lied to you. The only time I ever feel like the show kind of lied to you was when
the drunk driving.
I felt that was outright disingenuous.
I certainly, the way the show was marketed and promoted, it led viewers to that conclusion. My mom, bless her soul, calls me and says, I think I figured out how Jack dies. And I'm like, how? And she goes, I think it's a drunk driving accident. As if it's like, that's the biggest thing. I'm like, really? Is that what you're putting together?
Yeah.
And they felt that the big, like, aha moment was going to be, you know, that Jack and Rebecca were splitting up. Mm-hmm. And that's what they were talking about when things really went, you know, haywire. But it just, I think it just got away from them, that they didn't know what to do. I think when people started saying, you know, will Jack die in this? And they said, well, tune in and you'll find out. It just seems like when you tease something like that and you play along with that and you don't deliver the goods, people are very upset. And I think that's what happened there.
I mean, especially though, I mean, the way that it's edited and all of that, it just, it's telling the viewer this. And like, it's one thing to have like sleight of hand. Yeah. And it's one thing to edit things a certain way. Like you could argue the way they edited Beth in the season two finale, it points to Beth being the one who's her, but it's not making this outright statement that I felt that the drunk driving portion was telling you.
It absolutely was the way that was edited together led you to that conclusion. The only reason that I wasn't fully expecting it was because it just felt too obvious. And you know, Dan, right? It's just like, it can't be this. But then to not have it be another way, and I have to wait, you know what I mean? That like, this was punted. The other thing I would say is that Dan said this was going to probably go into season two. Now, not everyone reads interviews, of course, but he had been on record and he had said that to us too. So that was my understanding, that it necessarily wouldn't, it would play out longer than that season. But I completely agree and understand fans' frustrations 100%. Like, if you court a mystery, as you saw with Lost, you have to deal with the other side of it too, if people don't feel satisfied. You know,
right.
Yes.
And one thing I'd love to know what you guys thought too is, I thought it was such a powerful dark moment to end, you know, that they quote unquote separated at the end of season one. And then to resolve that in the first episode felt a little too soon to me. I wanted that to go on another episode or two, and what that was like for them being apart. I love the resolution scene. Don't get me wrong, where Rebecca comes back to the door, you know, where Jack's staying and says, you know, I'm taking charge here. But it just felt too soon for me. What about you?
I know a lot of people didn't like the season one finale because they split up. They felt that was dark. I personally liked it because it gave them a complete arc for that particular season. And I think actually having them get resolved within one episode was probably a little too quick for my blood.
Oh yeah. I would not have resolved that quickly. And that's the thing I said, even in our podcast, like I would have told Jack, you need some time out, buddy. And I felt like for me, had that been in my life, I would have personally need a little cool down time. And, you know, so to see it happen so quickly kind of made the magic of Jack and Rebecca come back to you again once on screen, that, oh no, they can fix this much quicker than normal humans can. You know, their love is that special.
But I remember seeing like a video of Milo saying like, there's absolutely no way like anybody, any couple can be as sweet as as Rebecca and Jack. And I feel like them resolving this issue within a day or two, whatever it is, that just speaks to that sweetness that's 100% unattainable, in my opinion.
I think that, you know, again, like if you tell someone you make such a dramatic move like that, you need to pay that off with developing that longer. Like, it just, if you're going to end your season on that to resolve by the end of the first episode, just, yeah, it just felt, too soon.
So that being said though, what do you think makes This Is Us different and stand out amongst the other network dramas going on right now?
It feels like that there's, you know, there's something for everyone in each of the characters. I mean, I love the way they've handled I love the way they handle race on This Is Us with Randall and Beth and the family, and, you know, Randall's obviously being adopted by a white family. Like, I don't feel like they've shied away from that. I feel like they've done some very like honest portrayals there. I feel like Kate, I don't really remember seeing, you know, a plus size character like that in such a such a leading role, mm-hmm. And kind of examining, you know, her struggles. I thought that was really brave. And I look at, you know, a great scene too, going back to what we were saying, like Chrissy on the scale and taking off the earrings, I thought was such a powerful moment. So I think the show has gone to those really vulnerable places that people respond to. I think there's a bit of wish fulfillment maybe with Jack Pearson as Super Dad. A lot of us haven't had the best fathers, and you just go, God, I wish he were my dad. You sense that, like, you love the way he parents, you know, mm-hmm. It's a great role model. So, I think it's a combination of those things, but I just feel like the show just checks, like, if you're like, like in the quadrants, it's like checking off all the right boxes and all these different quadrants, you know, it brings the humor, but it isn't afraid to, you know, make you cry and, you know, tackle death. And again, it's like transracial adoption. Sure. We'll handle that. you know, I just think, you know, bisexuality, sure. You know, it's all there. Like I do love the way they go deep on an issue.
I will say that I wish I was just as good of a husband as Jack. I'm sure Mary would say the same exact thing.
You're great. You're wonderful.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So talking about the show on a little bit more of a macro level here, what is the dynamic like with the creative staff between Dan Fogelman and Isaac Aptaker and Elizabeth Berger as kind of like this show running job? What is this like between that? Because it seems a little confusing for me.
From what I gather, you know, Dan obviously created the show and was the primary showrunner, and Isaac and Elizabeth, who are fantastic, by the way. Have you seen Love, Simon?
No, we haven't, but it's on our list.
You really should put that on your list. Yeah, they're wonderful writers and humans, and they, you know, they were elevated to co-showrunners. So basically, it's sort of a three-headed benevolent monster, if you will, you know, at this point. And, you know, with Dan doing, you know, all his movies too, you know, he's got Life Itself coming out this week, you know, so he's sometimes not going to be able to be there. So then Isaac and Elizabeth obviously are taking a more prominent role. But my understanding of it is it's, you know, they're all three in that highest level of decision making collaborating.
Is that normal for television? Like I've seen co-showrunners, you know, obviously like Better Call Saul with Peter Gould and Vince Gilligan, or even like Halt and Catch Fire with Christopher Cantwell and the other guy. I can't remember his name now. but three showrunners, is that kind of normal or is that abnormal?
I don't think it's abnormal. I think it has happened. I like your example of bringing up Better Call Saul, because that one was really interesting because, you know, the idea was that Vince was going to step away and kind of give the show just to Peter earlier, but he found himself so engaged that he's been sticking around a lot longer. I think this season, and Vince is the kindest man and will always just push credit to someone else. And he's like, no, really, this season, you know, it's Peter's show. And I went on the set this year and Vince happened to be directing the second to last episode. So it was good to see him. But I don't think it's abnormal at all. It doesn't strike me as abnormal. And I wonder, though, with Dan, you know, and his brain going in so many different directions, if he will, you know, eventually, like, you know, take more of a step back and leave it in Isaac and Elizabeth's hands.
Well, that being said, then what seems to be the mood of the cast and everyone as they entered the filming for season three? And has it even wrapped yet?
Yeah, so they are, you know, fairly deep into it now. I'm guessing they're probably about maybe a third of the way of filming the season. The mood seemed good, light. You know, they say, you know, they're still getting along really well. You know, they divide people. But as of right now, they said it was a lot like, you know, first back after like the summer, like everyone went to their different summer camps and it was like first day of school and everyone got to reunite again. So they're pretty happy. I mean, that's the vibe I get. And, you know, having interviewed them all a bunch, they're all lovely to talk to. I will tell you that. So I think the mood was light and eager to get back to work and kind of, you know, prove they don't want to be a one or a two season wonder. You know, I think that they want this thing, like you were saying earlier, to kind of get into that next level, to be one of the great dramas, you know, that mm-hmm. I think they would love to be considered in that category.
So from what you know of season three, doing your reporting, do you think it's more of the same, or do you think we should be expecting some changes in the narrative style or even some shocking twists that might be coming our way?
It probably would sound a little boring to say expect more of the same, but I think that that's what it sounded like to some extent. I mean, and to some of the extent, same also means, you know, this is a show that does take chances. You look at episode 12, I think, from season one, or Memphis, and that episode 12 being the Jack, Rebecca, Dr. K episode, mm-hmm. Doing these standalone things. You saw it last year with the Deja episode. I think they are committed to doing, you know, things like that. There's going to be a Vietnam episode that's like kind of like a solo like showcase, like in these standalone mm-hmm. Forms. They're going to be shooting in Vietnam, which I think is, you know, pretty different. But so I think it is the same level that you've expected, but I think they're emboldened maybe to take a few more chances based on, you know, Dan, just being restless in a good way creatively, you know, mm-hmm. and wanting to take some chances.
So in Vietnam, is either Justin Hartley there, or is Milo actually going to be in Vietnam, or are they just using it for like establishing shots?
I think that they're still figuring it out from what I've gathered. But I think that, you know, parts of the valley could probably, you know, double as jungle if they needed to. But like you're saying, I mean, you absolutely have to send, you know, Justin there. Because if you need those present day scenes and you're showing a city in Vietnam, like it's just, you know, it'll be hard to fake that. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think that they want to get some, you know, bring Milo over there. I'd also wonder if, you know, as you know, the season is going to heavily involve Jack's little brother, Nicky. Mm-hmm. So, and that role has been cast now. And to bring that actor too. So I think we could probably see both, I would think, over there.
Who was the actor that was cast for Nicky?
It's Michael Angarano from he was on Will and Grace and a bunch of other things. So that's going to be really fun to see his introduction. It sounds like from talking to Milo that there's a lot of surprises about Vietnam. Justin Hartley said the same thing. Milo's reaction was, are we allowed to swear on this podcast? Or
Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Nothing aggressive, but he just basically said he uttered multiple holy shits when he said, I didn't see it coming, and I really don't think the audience is going to be seeing this coming. Mm-hmm. They really talk about, you know, in getting this fuller picture of Jack this season, that, you know, learning about Jack's past in this Vietnam and maybe what happened to Nicky, it sounds like there's a lot of holy shits coming.
All right. So, you know, we had seen that Milo had even said that the theme through season three is going to be discovery in the past. So obviously that's what we're going to be working on with Jack's character. Do you think that there's going to be even more discovery of kind of the early part of the courtship or the early part of the marriage between Jack and Rebecca?
Yeah, you've hit it exactly. So both. I mean, I think in terms of going way back, like it sounds like we're going to learn a little bit more about, you know, we've obviously seen Jack's, you know, the alcoholic father and, you know, how that impacted Jack and Nicky. So it sounds like we're going to learn a little bit more about that past that led him to Vietnam. But then, like you said, when he gets back from Vietnam, his first date with Rebecca. So we are, you remember that night we met, that Jack and Rebecca met when she was singing Moonshadow, mm-hmm. When the robbery that never was, you know, did not happen. we're actually, that first date takes place on that very night. So the season premiere will take us right into that. So we're going to see what happened the rest of that night. And their first date, from what I hear, does not exactly go according to plan. So, you know, you saw that sort of those magic, you know, love at first sight raised between them, but maybe the date doesn't quite go like that.
See, on our show, we have these thing called hot takes, and it's like our predictions for what's coming up. And my hot take for our last episode was that we were going to see the whole introduction again, but not from Jack's perspective, but from Rebecca's perspective.
Oh, I can love that.
Can you tell me if I'm right or if I'm wrong? Because I'm dying to know.
I don't know that, but I love exactly what you're saying, and I could completely see that. So they've done that. I mean, that's a good Dan, like, kind of fake out move too. Like we saw that with Rebecca's date, where we thought she was going on a date, but it was going to be with Jack, right? And it was with someone else or whatever. Like that's, you know, Dan loves something. I think you could be onto something there.
It's because I'm awesome.
Look at That's you. Why. Look at you.
So, hey, it appears that Rob Morgan, who was in Daredevil on Netflix, he's been cast for season three, right. For all you Daredevil heads out there. could you tell us a little bit about his role? Do you know a lot about it?
Yeah, I don't know too much. They want to be secretive about it, but he plays like a local city councilman, in Philly. His district is the built where Williams Building is.
Oh, okay.
So we know that will be tied. The question we don't really know is with This Is Us, which is so much fun, and we can get to some of the other guest stars too, like Jane Kaczmarek.
I was just about to ask you about her.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Is it like, will he be interacting with Ron Cephas Jones, William, or is it more, as we know, Randall and Beth are rehabbing that building? Mm-hmm. So will they run into issues there? And then that's how they'll run into Rob Morgan's character. So which, era does he fall into? So we don't know too much about that, but my guess is it, has to tie into what's one of those two, scenarios.
Sure. All right. So let's just get into my girl, Jane.
Yes.
This is great. Malcolm in the Middle is something that is deep in my heart. Obviously she's the mom from Malcolm in the Middle. What do we got on her?
Well, we don't have tons. We have a little bit. We know that she's going to be – now, Rob Morgan's character, that's going to be like a recurring role. So he'll be in, multiple episodes. Mm-hmm. Jane, as far as we know, is just in one episode. We don't know, again, how she comes into contact with any of the cast members or in what time period. But we know that she plays a liberal university professor and a scientist. And she's described as intelligent, warm, down to earth. Mm-hmm. That's what we know there. But again, they're playing that one really close to the vest, which is interesting to me.
Are we going to see more of Dan Loria and Wendy Malick as Toby's parents, do you think?
Such good casting, right?
I know.
Awesome.
I'm obsessed with Wendy Malick. She's amazing.
Well, you bring up – that's a good point too. So – if Chris Sullivan, who plays Toby, has anything to say about that, he would say yes, because when I asked him his favorite season two scene, he said it was getting to reunite with Dan Loria because they had their Broadway debuts together.
Oh, wow.
So he was very excited about that with the wedding finale. But I think we might, but Toby's brother should probably be a bigger question, right? Because as you know, he wasn't at the bachelor party and he wasn't at the wedding. So my bigger question is, when do we meet Toby's brother and what's going on there? Because there seems to be a certain level of estrangement.
Yeah, well, let's even talk about the flashes that we saw in the season two finale. Of course, we see that flash about Toby in the future, and he appears to, of course, be suffering from depression. So, let's delve into that a little bit.
Let's get sad.
I know, right?
So we know Toby struggled with depression before, but, we kind of think of him as the lighter comic relief, a happier guy for the most part when he's not almost dying of a heart collapse or whatever that was.
Crashing into tables, just whatevs,
It was very dramatic, very dramatic. That I felt was a little soapy. You're talking about, I thought that moment was a little soapy. Anyway, we can get the sidebar and get into that later. What's causing that depression? I think, Kate and Toby are going to have make another go at it in terms of having a child. Mm-hmm. Obviously after the miscarriage, which is a very powerful experience for them. In the little footage that's been released of season three, we see that, she says, "Let's make a baby." And I think he says, I'm your Huckleberry, basically. But I think they're going to have some struggles with that, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to be an easy road. Is that one of the factors? Is that the main factor that leads to Toby's depression? We don't know. My guess is it at least has to factor in there. But Elizabeth Berger said that there are, quote, many stresses on this first year of their marriage, is what she hinted. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of not an easy road, looks like This Is Us has promoted Lyric Ross, who plays Deja, to a full-time cast member. So for those who don't understand that, can you amplify on that for us? And what does that entail for Lyric Ross?
That's hard to say because, it's regular for them. They may just want to have these actors always available to them in first position, because we saw, for example, Alexandra Breckenridge, who plays Sophie, or Miguel, John Huertas, who plays Miguel, you know, they were series regular in season two. And if you count the number of episodes they were each in, I think it's about like 5 or 6 episodes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's significant. But when you think series regular, right, you think almost every episode. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say what that means other than, you know, they're committed to telling that story. But maybe she'll only be in, you know, a half dozen episodes or maybe not. But it means that she's going to be sticking around the family. It means they need to figure out why she mangled that Mercedes and, you know, deal with that anger and kind of welcoming her into the family and, you know, how that's going to impact Tess and Annie.
So we also have seen that Sterling K. Brown and Dan Fogelman have said that the flash forward that Sterling is in, it's way in the future, seems to be the end or the end game of their story. So I have a couple of questions. One, can you confirm the decade that they're in for us? And is it really the end game that we're seeing?
Yeah. It certainly sounds sexy to say that, right? you know, when he first said, like, you know, and we've already even shot parts of the final episode or whatever, it's just like, whoa, like you immediately spring to attention. Wait, are we there? So I think the decade... I would say the 2030s. I've heard different reports, and I will get back to you on this, whether that was a 20-year leap or a 15-year leap. Mm-hmm. But I think it's 20, actually. But in any case, even if you just do simple math, if it's 15 or 20, that will put us in the 2030s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's where we know we are. What the end game thing means, it means that Dan loves to jump around time, and I think he's had like found such, you know, creative ways of exploring it. And I look forward to, you know, every time they find like a new era, like he gets so excited to unleash. I just think the show is so ambitious in the way it tells story like that. So he's saying that that's as far ahead, the end game, meaning that's as far ahead as we're going to jump. Mm-hmm. So like that will be our final, you know, resting spot in the timeline. It doesn't necessarily mean that the show ends there, though it might. My guess is it doesn't. But just when we're flashing ahead, we're not going to go ahead 60 more years and see like their, you know, their great, great, great grandchildren, it sounds like. But who knows? Maybe he'll change his mind. I don't know.
So, of course, speaking about that scene with the future Randall and Tess, it, of course, did it feel like things are going to be in a good direction at that point? Things are not exciting in that little flash that they did. So should we be prepared for more heartbreak and tissues? I mean, I guess the obvious answer is yes, this is us. Like, of course you need tissues.
Nope, pack your Kleenex boxes up. This is it. It's all fun and games from now on. I think you're right that there's more heartbreak there. That certainly seemed fairly ominous. You know, I think I'm sure you guys did the same thing I did. You went, okay, first question, who is her? Like, mm-hmm. You know, is it Deja? Is something happened to Beth? You know, Susan Clutchy Watson has gone on record. You know, I interviewed her and she said, I talked to Dan. My mom was going to stop watching the show if they were killing me. And so he assured me that they weren't. So we know Beth isn't dying. But yeah, it's, you know, so you go through your head, you know, who are the possible people that it could be about? So it's, you know, it's Annie, right? Or Deja, mm-hmm. or Beth, but not Beth not dying. Or another character that we're just not thinking of.
See, I thought it might be Rebecca. I thought timeline-wise, yeah, it might be Rebecca.
She could absolutely still be alive. That's one thing, you know, I definitely thought. And I asked, you know, Mandy, we were joking around about that. She's like, I hope she's still in the picture by then.
All the makeup.
Right. And so Randall would be, actually, so this is their 38th birthday. The season premiere also, by the way, in the present day, does another birthday thing where we're at their birthday. So 38. So Randall should be about 58. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, so after all that, we've come to the conclusion that she would be very, very, very old. But she's in play. She's in play. But then the other question was, okay, we said, you know, who is it? Now our next question is, what is it? Mm-hmm. So what happened? Is it, you know, people are speculating, like, is it someone who's ill? Are they saying it's just time to visit her, see her, meaning like almost like a grave that you're visiting and it's too hard to go see that? Is it someone's in trouble with the law? You know, is it, you know, it could be so many things. So, you know, it doesn't sound good, whatever it is. And I actually asked Christy that, and her quote was, oh, it's not good. It's not good at all. Like, she didn't obviously elaborate beyond that. Sorry.
I just hope Annie doesn't end up on the pole. That would...
hey, Annie, worst case scenario.
Right, worst case scenario. There we go.
I hope it's not Rebecca on the pole. Yeah. Like, that's really what I hope.
That would be a tad awkward. All the makeup, all the pole, everywhere. It's just not good.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is the status of the show after season three? Is it renewed for another year, or is it being renewed year to year?
So NBC has been so proactive with the show, as you know. They picked it up after just like an episode or two for the season. And then after season one, they picked it up for two seasons, which is fairly, you know, unusual. Mm-hmm. You talk about what's usual and unusual. That was such a, you know, they've always had these huge, you know, shows of confidence. It is not picked up beyond this season. It's, you know, its future is not in doubt at all or in jeopardy. It's just, you know, how many years do they want to make this at this point? But we're years away from, you know, multiple seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, away from, you know, talking about the end of the show, it sounds like. So I guess the question is, does it get picked up? Do they do another 2-year pickup, or do they do another year pickup is really the question.
Mm-hmm. What else should we be looking for in season three? Any particular Easter eggs, interesting montages, or that is This Is Us always excels at? Or is it, like I said, the obligatory twist that no one ever expects?
I think it's definitely that. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure of that. Let's see. I mean, I think if you think of characters, you know, I think the Miguel relationship is always interesting, because I think, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I think the ultimate, of course, you know, fan fiction, you know, wish fulfillment scene was, you know, the Jack, old Jack and Rebecca, you know, dream sequence that Kate had. It was so perfect for the show. It gave fans exactly what they wanted. But I think ultimately it just digs Miguel in deeper, because now you're like, you got to be like, okay, look, Jack's gone. He's never coming back. Except like this. This is what you always wanted, right? And then you're, you know, it's like you get a taste of it, and then you're like, oh no, Miguel's still here. So I just think they were digging themselves in a deeper hole by doing that, and they're making their task. They know it's hard. How do you make Miguel? Not just because Jack was great doesn't mean Miguel's bad, right? It's like, I don't know how you guys feel about Miguel, but a lot of people just hated that character out of the gate just because they love Jack so much and no one could replace Jack. It's like unfair to the character or the story. So slowly they're building Miguel's story, I think. So I think we're going to see more of his backstory. I think you're going to see, you know, how did he end up, you know, divorced? I think you want to know maybe, why did he disappear from the family, right? Why did they have to reconnect on Facebook, of all places? You know, he seems so dedicated to this family. What happened? You know what I mean? Was there estrangement there? So I don't know how interested you are in Miguel, but I think
there's... Oh, very interested. Oh. I want to know about his affinity for Christmas ornaments and lawn decorations. that's when I was sold on Miguel. At first, I wasn't too into him, and then I saw that he has all the holiday flair, and I was like, all right, he's in my boat.
That's fantastic. And speaking of drilling down in characters, you know, Toby, you're going to get his backstory, like we were saying, and then Beth. Who's just wonderful, and I really think, you know, emerged as sort of the secret weapon of the show in season two. I think we're going to learn a lot more. She has those sisters, like what's going on with her family. So I think you can expect if not standalone episodes, like focused episodes on these tertiary characters. I think you guys will all agree that scene at Kevin's rehab, when the three of them were bitching about, you know, yes, being outside of the Pearsons, I thought it was wonderful and, you know, had promise. So I think you'll see that. And a question I had was, and I'd love to know what you guys think, is how are you feeling about, you know, Ron Cephas Jones not being around as much? Obviously, William has passed, but they've said they wanted to keep him around and they want to use him. I felt like he was underutilized for what they were saying in season two.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, I want as much William as I can get. I mean, I love the Pearson family, but he has a big piece in my heart. So I would love to have him weave in more, but I just don't know where they could.
Yeah, I think that's an issue. Is, you know, do you have him as sort of ghost dad? You know what I mean? Do you flashback mysteries where he just works into the plot? I think, again, going back to the Rob Morgan thing, you know, there's a chance there for him to kind of weave into the plot possibly a little organically. Dan said that he agreed that they didn't get to use him as much as they want to, and that he plays a big part of episode two this season. And he said, I think he's significant in at least two or three other of the early episodes. So I think more William than last season, maybe not as much as season one.
Yeah, I love the creative ways that they did, in fact, use William. And we were actually just talking about it on our last episode, where we saw William just pass by Randall in that moment. It was
in the apartment building.
It was just like, but it was like ghost dad like. But you know, it was there, and I thought that was a really interesting way to use William.
Just making up a scenario in my mind that William found all these bricks in his apartment building and hid little treasures in it, and Kevin's going to be knocking down walls with his mallet finding out William's treasures. That will not be the plot line. This is why I'm not a writer.
I admire your creativity there, though. I'm in. I would watch that.
What's your take on Zoe, by the way, and Kevin being together? Did you find that was like a shock, or is that something that you think we could really lean into as viewers and as for the show?
I like the idea of family tension. I hear that Beth's reaction is not going to be a positive one when she sniffs romance here. So I think the idea of seeing, you know, Beth get involved in that and not liking this relationship, what do you call it, like anti-Cupid there, you know, yes. That role, I think could be a lot of fun. Obviously we don't know too much about the character. I'm interested, I guess. For me though, it kind of threw me for a loop because, you know, again, with Alexandra Breckenridge being named a series regular, the Sophie story I think is not over. So I was surprised that they were taking it, and it did throw me in that way. Like, I was like, if anything, I thought, you know, Sophie might be back in the picture and we figure out, you know, how we got there. So yes, it did throw me for a little bit of a loop.
I was just going to ask you, do we close the book on Sophie yet? Is that completely done?
they're being evasive about that, but like, she's still part of the cast. So like, I would say not, you know, there's some story to be told there for sure. But yeah, I like the idea of new romance. I mean, Kevin definitely seems like someone who will probably, by the end of the show, will have lots of girlfriends. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
we always joke about how we had random girlfriend number one, random girlfriend number two, and then it was Sophie, and now it's Zoe. So,
yeah, there you go.
Hey, you know, they all show up at least once.
Right, absolutely.
Well, Dan, I think that is it for today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Is there anything else, Dan, that you would like to chat about or share?
No, I think we covered great ground, and we should do it again soon.
That'd be great. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dan Sneerson, everybody.
There you go.
That was I want to say epic conversation. I'm not sure it's epic, but it's pretty damn close.
You know, it's just, I loved speaking to people like Dan, who it's their job to pretty much hang out with, delve into, and then write about our favorite shows. I mean, what an amazing job. And for him to, you can tell that he loves what he does, that he loves to sit there just like regular fans and be like, what was that about? Who's this going to be? I think I have an idea about this or that. And he gets to also have these wonderful interviews and interactions with the cast and crew.
Right. One of the things that you guys aren't privy to as you listen to this is the fact that we actually did this over Skype. And I was actually able to, and Mary was able to see Dan. We were having a conversation. And you just see him, like, as he's talking. He's just excited about it.
Truly.
And,
truly.
I really enjoy that. And the fact that he's actually paid to do stuff like this. When we're just two jabronis in our home-built studio, our basement, you know.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good.
It is all fun. So with all of that great information, and even clearing up the relationship, the creative relationship between Dan Fogelman and Isaac Aptaker and Elizabeth Berger as a troika of showrunners.
A trifecta. Yeah.
I would go there as well.
There
Why
you go.
Not? Look at you with the SAT word.
Oh, honey, I did very well on my SATs.
I know, you did much better than me. So going from there to all the actual stuff with the flash forwards and seeing Toby and Kevin in Vietnam and exploring all of that, great, great conversation. Truly. I'm pumped and jacked. Pumped and jacked for season three.
Awesome. Now, as are we all.
I'm ready
so
to go.
So say we all.
So look at you bringing. Oh my goodness.
So say we all.
That is my girl. That's when you know you've married the right woman. Bringing in BSG references to a This Is Us podcast. Oh, that's man. My girl. All right. You ready to close this bad yes. boy out? All right. Once again, thank you to Dan Sneerson. Amazing. Hopefully, we'll be able to have him back once the mid-season break happens, yeah. which is going to happen. Dan, confirm that for us. And as always, season three is about to begin. So when you do want to converse with us about season three on social media, either tag us on Facebook or on Twitter and use the hashtag ThisIsUs2. Of course, you can always email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. There you go.
You're getting there. You're getting there.
You know, it's almost like I've been doing this for quite some time
now.
Yeah, you know. Man, I'm not bringing it today.
That's okay. Let's close out the show.
All right, let's do it.
So this is our final episode before season three. If you're excited, just know that we're excited along with you. If you don't have friends to get to watch the show with, know that we are now those friends for you. And we are here to geek out and love and cry and just enjoy each of these episodes. I want to take a moment to thank Sam's Girl 2002, who left us a written review in iTunes. She said, I found Mary and Blake through Outlander Cast. I love their analysis of the shows, even if I don't always agree. They are a joy to listen to, and I always look forward to their next episode. Thanks for an entertaining, thought-provoking podcast. You get all the lemonades. Well, thank you so much, Sam's Girl, and to everyone else who's taken the time to rate a review and even just to listen. We really appreciate it. So thank you for being a part of our day. My name's Mary.
And my name's Blake, and I'm ready for season three. Can't wait.
This is us, too.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.